Okay, we start a new Mishnah. It's just a quick introduction. We're on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, and the Torah says that chametz is asur from chatzos on Yudal midday on Yudal beNisan. Now chatzos is the end of the sixth hour. However, the Chachamim made a gzeirah, and they said the chametz is going to be usher a little earlier. The question is, how much earlier? So the Mishnah records three different opinions on this question. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ochlin kol chamesh, that you're allowed to eat chametz during the fifth hour. V'sarfin b'tchila sheish. And even though the time on a Doraisa level of Bir Chametz is the beginning of the seventh hour, the end of the sixth hour, beginning of the seventh hour, but nevertheless that sixth hour is going to be Asur Bir Rabbanon. And the reason for that is because a person could make a mistake of 1 hour. So instead of burning it at the beginning of the seventh hour, which is 12 noon on a perfect day, which would be a Doraisa, the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Meir, required that we burn it 1 hour early, because we're afraid a person might make a mistake of 1 hour. Reuven, you remember this, we discussed this yesterday. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ochlin kol arba. In other words, you have to stop eating chametz at the end of the fourth hour. So by the time you get to the beginning of the fifth hour, which is 2 hours earlier than Doraisa, you have to refrain from eating chametz. So let's say on a perfect day, whereas the Torah says you have to stop eating chametz at 12 noon, the Rabbanan, Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, will require already at 10 a.m., 2 hours earlier, you have to cease from eating chametz. It means we're worried about a mistake of 2 hours. Now, what about Hanah? Meaning, at what point does chametz on a Darabana level become also Hanah? I'm not allowed to feed it to my dog, I'm not allowed to sell it to a guy. So that's called tolim kol chametz. Tolim, which means we sort of hang it, means it's not to be destroyed during that fifth hour, according to Rabbi Yehuda, from 10 to 11. But rather, you can feed it to a dog. You can give it away as a gift. You can sell it. You can enjoy the benefit of that chametz during that fifth hour. So it works like this. Chametz, according to Rabbi Yehuda, midrabanan, becomes asur. At what point? As far as achil is concerned, at the end of the fourth hour, which means at 10 a.m. So that's when it becomes asur ba'achila. But as far as Nisar Anah is concerned, Rabbi Yehuda is on the same wavelength as Rabbi Meir, and he says that the Nisar Anah only begins with the beginning of the sixth hour, which means 11 a.m. So from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., according to Rabbi Yehuda, the chametz is also b'achila, but it's mutar b'hanah. And that's what we have over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to skip a little bit to Rabbi Gamliel so that we get the whole picture. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, he's the third Shita, and he says the following, that fundamentally I agree with Rabbi Yehuda, but with the exception only of Truma. And with regard to Truma, which means if, let's say, from the five species of grains, you had truma and you made it into a bread, which is chametz. So Rabbi Gamliel says that we have to give a little bit more leeway for truma. In other words, we have to delay the prohibition of truma. So as far as chulin is concerned, everything that's not truma, necholim kol arba. In other words, we have to begin at the beginning of the fifth hour to abstain from achila. In that sense, Rabbi Gamliel is identical with Rabbi Yehuda, that chametz becomes also b'achila at the beginning of the fifth hour. 2 hours early, allowing for a mistake of 2 hours. But with regard to truma, if you took truma and you made chametz out of truma, then we're going to allow him to eat that truma 1 extra hour, kol chametz, which means from 10 to 11, we're not allowed to eat chulin, but we're allowed to eat truma. And then truma only becomes us at the beginning of the fifth hour. I'm sorry, at the beginning of the sixth hour, I meant to say. And then, if we have no choice, because once we're at the beginning of the sixth hour, then even truma becomes also, if it's chametz, it's sarfin b'tchila shesh. We have to burn the truma at the beginning of the sixth hour. Can anyone just answer a simple question? Why would Rabbi Gamliel be... Why is his agenda to try to postpone the Iser and Truma as opposed to Chulin? What is he trying to facilitate or to expand?
I don't ask you that question.
The Achil of Truma. I'll tell you why. Because Truma is Kodesh. And the last thing that we want to do with Truma is to burn Truma. That's really, how shall I say, it's the fallback position, the worst, you know, only in total desperation do we want to allow for the destruction of Truma. So what we're going to do is, we're going to take that hour, which is the fifth hour, and we're going to define it as a Bein HaShmashos kind of situation, as like a borderline twilight zone. In other words, yes, people do make mistakes of 2 hours, and therefore we have to be careful already in the fifth hour. Rabbi Yud is right, says Rabbi Gamliel, but not that many people out there in the populace will make a full mistake of a full 2 hours. So we have like the rove and the miyud here. The rove, meaning those who make mistakes, fit into the category of 1 hour. 1 hour mistake. And that's where Rabbi Meir comes in. But Rabbi Yudah says, you know what, but there's still a silent minority. You know, there's a certain 20% of the population that will make a mistake of 2 hours. And since chametz is such a severe iser, we have to take into consideration even the miyud, even the 20% of the population that will make an expanded mistake of 2 hours. However, since most of the people would not make a mistake of more than an hour, in the case of truma, where we're very hesitant, we're very inhibited about burning truma, we'd rather expand the possibility of eating the truma, which is the mitzvah of achilas truma v'kedushaso. Therefore, we're going to take that fifth hour, and with regard to truma, we're going to accept the approach of Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Gamliel's compromise, Shita. He's going to accept Rabbi Meir vis-a-vis truma because he wants to say that if most people would not make such a mistake of 2 hours, and even though Rabbi Gamliel is inclined towards Rabbi Yehud, that we have to worry about even that minority, but with regard to truma, we're not going to be concerned with the minority because we want to expand the possibility of eating truma. We want to minimize the situation of srefas truma, so that since there's a sizable percentage of the representation of the population that will make a mistake of 1 hour, therefore we're going to have to burn truma at the beginning of the sixth hour. That we have no choice. We're in a desperate situation.
Now, if I have the truma which I can't eat, I'm not going to be searching out a kohen to give it to, am I at this point?
I guess you'll have to find a kohen, because your obligation is not just to be mafresh truma, but also to give the truma over to a kohen. Now, you may have been very, you know, laid back about it. Maybe you were busy with a million and one things. You didn't get a chance to give the kohen the truma. But when it comes to Erev Pesach, you know, you better get yourself over to the Kohen as soon as you can, because otherwise you're going to be inadvertently causing the destruction of Truma, because this Truma is Chametz. It's a loaf of Truma bread, Kikar Shel Truma. And since it's Chametz, you have to make sure that it doesn't remain uneaten before the Shas Isur Chametz, because then we're going to have to burn this Truma. So you're, in a sense, the cause of burning Truma. So what?
Kohen's not going to want it, is he?
What I'm worried about the Kohen is like he's going to be flooded. You know, he's going to have piles of Truma shall come.
Does he have to take it if you offer it to him? I mean, like you said,
that's an interesting question. I don't know. You'd have to know more about the laws of Truma. On the one hand, if it's realistic that he could eat the truma, then yes, I think he should accept the truma. And then not only will he have the key of mitzvah of achilas truma v'kedushas, but he's also going to save the truma from the fire, which is a great mitzvah. But on the other hand, if he realizes there's no way, no how, you know, even if he gathers together his whole family, you know, there's no way they can eat all this truma. So he has a right to say to the Israel, go find another Kohen. No, I don't want to get stuck with this truma and then have to burn it. Right, and then I'd have to burn it. Right? The Kohen on the receiving end would have to. But I heard there's a very good Jewish receiver, by the way.
There's no concept of Mechiras Truma?
There's no what?
Principle of Mechiras Truma.
What do you mean? You mean pigeon on Truma?
Pinyon,
no, there's no pigeon on Truma. You know, Truma, once it's Kodesh, that's it.
No, but he, the Kohen can sell Truma.
To who? Who's he going to sell? To another Kohen? I mean,
to
Chas v'Shalom. You know, you can't sell Truma to a God. Yeah, that would be worse than burning it, or almost as bad, let's put it that way. So we want to make sure that the Truma is Nechal Kibitzvaso, Bikdushaso, and that we have to try to hurry up, you know, rush the process, and we're going to give you, according to our Gamaliel, an extra hour, and hopefully you're not going to make a mistake of 2 hours. Now, the general introduction to this whole Mishnah that we're learning is that people make mistakes about the time. Now, why would that be? I mean, just look at your clock. But the answer is they didn't have clocks. So if they didn't have clocks, it was all dependent upon the sun, right? When the sun hit the zenith in the middle of the sky, you knew it was noon. But in a cloudy day, you know, you could really make a mistake. And the question between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is, where do the majority fit in? Will the majority of people be subject to a mistake of 2 hours or only of 1 hour? So Rabbi Meir is satisfied to say that most people, if they make a mistake, it'll be 1 hour. We'll give them that leeway of an hour. But Rabbi Yehuda is going much further, that he's saying that there's a very serious probability that people will make a mistake of 2 hours. And we have to take that into consideration when we're talking about the Isur Chametz. So we're going to start the Isur Chametz a full 2 hours earlier. Now, the big question here is that if Rabbi Yehuda recognizes the probability, whatever statistical probability is, I don't have it in percentages, but of people making a 2 hour mistake, why does he allow you to sell the chametz, or alternatively to feed your dog and be nene from you during that 1 hour, meaning from the fifth hour till the sixth hour? He says just sell it. Now, one way of looking at this is maybe it's a financial issue, because let's say he has whiskey, you know, that's worth a lot of money. So we're going to give him an extra hour to sell it. And in this case, he can sell it to a guy. Another way of looking at it is to say that the Isur Hanah is not as severe of a violation as the Isur Achila. The Isur of Achila and Chametz could be as severe as an Isur Kares. Again, we're talking here on Erev Pesach. So on Erev Pesach, I don't know if it would be an Isur Kares. I mean, we'd have to wait till we get to the third parak for that. But it's a very severe Isur. Hanah, for example, the Rama writes in Hilchos Machlos Asuris that whenever a substance is Asur Bahanah, like for example, Arla, Chlaya Kerev, Basu Bacholav, and Chametz, and you violate the Isur Hanah, you don't get Malkus for that. That's not the complete violation of the law. It's very interesting. A lav in the Torah has what you call the Iker Alav and the Tofel. You know, the main primary lav, which generates 39 lashes if you violate. And then there's what's called a lav Tofel. Lav Tofel means it's a bit secondary. And that expresses itself in the fact that we alleviate him of a punishment. And we don't give him Malkus. And the Rambam holds that whenever you have an Isur Hanah, then that's a lav tofel. That's not the original full blasted isur, and it drops down a few decibels. You don't get malchus if you violate it, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going to be more lenient with regard to the isur hanah, and he's going to allow you to benefit from the chomish the fifth hour until the beginning of the sixth, and that's called tolin kol chomish. Tolin means you're not allowed to eat it, but you don't have to destroy it. So you'll ask me, well, if I can't eat it, so for all intents and purposes, I might as well burn it. What do I gain by it? What am I just going to hang it up on my, you know, it's a piece of artwork? What do I gain by this? The answer is, I can sell it. I can feed it to my dog. So all that is very significant, because the Isur Hanah is not on the same level as the Isur Achila. It's not as severe. He has here in the footnote a tzlach, the tzlach, that's the note of Yehudi, writes, lo echmiru kol kach bahana kemo ba'achila mishum she isuro kal yoter, kal with a kuf, it's a lighter isur relatively, may isur achila. So the real chomer dike isur is achila, the kal is the isur hano. And he quotes the Rambam in the 8th parak of Macholos Asuris, kol machal she'osu gam b'hano ein lokin al hanoso. You don't get malchus if you benefit from it. And therefore the gzera of hano is not the same as the gzera of achila. The real gzera with a capital G is going to be the gzera of achila, because achila is so chomer. Now the Yerushalmi has a whole nother version of this machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, according to which their argument is about the nature of the time for the Issa Chometz Min HaTorah. According to Rabbi Meir, the Issa Torah of Chometz, only the onset of the Issa Torah is Leil Tesvav. Rabbi Meir never recognized the Issa Chometz as Erev Pesach from noon and on. And therefore, it was the Chachamim who instituted the Iser on the last half of Yudalit, meaning from noon until the evening. That whole enterprise is a Drabbanon. Now, since Bnei Adam, since people make a difference, you know, they get confused between the seventh hour and the sixth hour, so when the Rabbanon instituted this Gzeira on the second half of the day, they started it from 1 hour before noon. That's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, holds that Chometz is Asur min HaTorah from noon and on. And therefore, we could assume that the sixth hour, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a much more severe Iser, because again, the Torah prohibits Chometz at the beginning of the seventh hour, so there's going to be an extension of 1 hour. On top of that 1 hour, Rabbi Yehuda is going to add another hour. But again, all this is based on a fundamental machlokas, according to the Shalom between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. When is the inception of the Iser Chometz Min HaTorah? Is it noon, or is it the evening going into the holiday itself? Now, there's something called Arba Tzrichim Lahodos. Are you familiar with that? There are four people who have to recite a special Thanksgiving prayer. That's called Birchas. What do we call it?
Gomel, or Hagomel.
Okay, one of them is called Yardei Hayom. Again, in the old days when you took a sea voyage, it was always very, very dangerous. I don't know, do any of you gentlemen have any interest in art? You do? So one of the most famous, popular themes for artists was ship voyages. You know, they were actually painters, you know, artists who tied themselves down to the mast of the sea to feel the rage of the pain of the waves, you know, as they rushed up against the sea, so against the ship, so that they could paint it, you know. And if a person is spared, meaning he reaches the dry land, he reaches the shore, he's chayav in hodah. Now, some poskim say that the same thing applies to flying an airplane over the seas. You know, that's a question. The next category is called Holchei Midbarios. So if you went through the desert, which is very dangerous, and you survived it, you have to be Modeh to Hashem. You have to give Hodah. The third category is Chavush Sheyotza Mibeis HaSurim. That if a person gets out of jail. And the last one is Cholish and Israp, but the post can say that he was very ill. It could have been, you know, life-threatening. And when he gets out, some say every surgery today is life-threatening. Unfortunately, we know this in my family. My father, may he rest in peace, died during surgery. So surgery is always considered life-threatening. Now, today what we have is Birchas HaGomel, correct? But back in the day when the Beis HaMikdash stood, there was another obligation, more fundamental, primary obligation. That was to bring a carbon toda. Correct, a carbon toda. Now, this carbon toda is called a carbon shlomim. And if you'll see in the Mishnayos in Zvachim, which we recite every day, for those who say it, it's shalmei toda. It's called shalmei toda. That's what it's called. Now, the shalmei toda are comprised of different kinds of lechamim, of lechem. For example, there are four different categories of lechem. Three of those four categories are made of matzah. They don't allow them to leaven. But there's one of the four which is chametz. So let's say, for example, if there are 40 lachmei todah, let's assume that 10 out of the 40 will be made of chametz. Now, if those 10 are made of chametz, those lachmei todah, they can only be eaten for, like any shlamim, what's called yom v'layla. It is the day that you bring the korban and the night after the korban. Now, our Mishnah here is very concerned with lachmei todah if they weren't eaten on time because of the issue of chametz. Because as we said, one of the four categories of lachmei todah is going to be chametz.
That's why we don't say mizmor todah on their Pesach.
Excellent. So let's take a look at the piece that we skipped in the Mishnah. V'od Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shtei Chalos Chametz Shel Todah Psulos Hayu Munachos Al Gabaya Itzdeba. Now, this is what's called a siman. You may recall that back at the time of the Migdash, when the rabbis wanted to send a message, transmit a message, they would very often use the Beis HaMikdash as a place to send a message. Like, for example, in the parasha that we read recently, we had the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. Where did you go in order to announce that you found something so that the loser could come forward and identify his object? You went to the Beis HaMikdash. Today, we should do it in the shuls, actually. That's the original minhag to replace the Beis HaMikdash. I always say that if you want to increase, you know, more people to show up in shul, it would be good to bring back this minhag of announcing that you found a lot. I mean, how many people would show up in shul if they knew that they could possibly find the diamond ring that they want? Anyway, so there was a place on the Har HaBayis outside the Beis HaMikdash which is called the Itzdeba. And it was a certain kind of platform, which the Gemara is going to go into in great length on Daf Yud Gimel, about what it was and what it functioned and where it was located. But in any event, that was a gathering place for people, and they would sit on the Itzdeba, and there's where the rabbis made a siman. What was their siman? They took lachmei todah, and they placed it on Erev Pesach on the Itzdeba. What was the siman? What was the message that they transmitted? Kol zman shemunachos, as long as the people saw these lachmei todah on the itzdeba, kol ha'am ochlim chametz. It means it was the green light. It's still within the time period that's permissible for eating chametz. Nitla achas. Again, keep in mind that we have to answer the question: why there are two lachmei todah that are placed on the itzdeba? And we'll get back to the word psulos in just a minute. So the answer is there were two simanim, there were two messages about two different zmanim that were being transmitted. When one of the two was taken away, that was a message that we reached the beginning of the fifth hour. And there was a shliach that was sent by Beis Din at the beginning of the fifth hour to remove one of these two lachamim. And what was the message, therefore, that was transmitted to the people? And this is according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, tolin. It means take all your chametz and get rid of it. What does it mean, get rid of it? Sell it, feed it to your dog. It's the beginning of the fifth hour. You're not allowed to eat it anymore. Okay? That's the beginning of the fifth hour.
It's only symbolic, isn't it? Because, how many people who are living in Eretz Yisrael are going to see that? And you just...
It could be that, you know, this is a way of getting out the word to those who were in the vicinity, right, and they would pass on the word to others, I guess.
Except once, you know, if they're going to do it at the beginning of that time, 30 seconds later is no good.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, maybe people would gravitate in order to... So again, once one of the two lechavim was removed, it means the clock struck 10 a.m. And what does that mean? Well, It means lo ochlin. We have to desist from eating chametz. That's Rabbi Yehuda's shita at 10 a.m. in the fifth hour. But velo sarfin, it's tolid, meaning you don't have to burn it. You're allowed to dispose of it in a way that you'll get benefit from it. But nitlu shteihem, when they took the second lechem off the yitzdava, that was a message that we got to the beginning of the sixth hour, and therefore eschilu kol ha'am sarfin, they had to burn their chametz. So this is all Rabbi Yehuda l'shitasam. Now, the question is, why were these two lechamim psulos? And the answer is because by using them as a sima, we have to sacrifice them, so to speak. They won't be able to be eaten. The mitzvah is to eat the lachmei todah. So the answer is we have to find lachmei todah psulos, because otherwise we would not be allowed to use these lechamim in the Beis HaMikdash as a siman, because by definition they're going to go into the Shas Isur of Achila, whether it's when the first challah was taken off, which means you can no longer eat this challah because it's already the beginning of the fifth hour, which according to Rabbi Yehuda, because of the mistake of 2 hours, that's already Isur of Achila, or certainly how much more so when they take off the second challah, at that point, at that moment in time, you have to burn it. So we don't want to burn Lachmei Todah, which has the Chalashem Hekdish of Shlomim, but the answer is that these are psulos. Now, how do you artificially produce Lachmei Todah psulos? So that's going to be a sugi in the Gemara. You know, you're lucky to have Lachmei Todah psulos. The Gemara rather insists on the fact that there was a deliberate process through which they were able to make these Lachmei Todah psulos, and the question is, are they allowed to do so? So that's going to be a sugi in the Gemara.
Can I ask something? It says v'sofrim b'tchilat sheish.
Right.
What does that mean at the beginning of the sixth hour? I mean, does that mean you've got the whole of the sixth hour and you start then, or it's got to be burnt by the beginning of the sixth hour?
It sounds like the Mishnah is saying that at the beginning of the sixth hour it's burnt. You know, you don't have to burn it as we're entering into the sixth hour.
No, but what's the latest time that you can burn it?
It sounds like it's 11 a.m. You know, there's the beginning of the sixth hour.
You've got to start before then. I mean,
I don't think so. I'll tell you why. Because
if you start then, the chametz is not going to be burned yet.
Because once you're involved in burning the chametz, we're going to assume you're not going to eat the chametz or benefit from it.
It's not that the chametz has to be itself burned.
Burned at the beginning, but you have to be in the process of burning it when the clock strikes 11. Now, there's a famous Baal Amar in this Mishnah. If you were to read this Mishnah straightforward, what would be your answer to the following question? How do I dispose of my chametz? Later on in the Mishnah, we're going to have in the second parak that according to the Chachamim, you can dispose of your chametz in any way you choose. You can take it apart, throw it into the river. Maybe an hour day, you can flush it down the toilet if it's small crumbs. Again, you don't have to pay the plumber, right? But what impression would you get from our Mishnah?
Srefa.
The Mishnah twice mentions Srefa. So the Baal Amor wants to know, why does the Mishnah mention Srefa? And he claims that although Rabbi Meir disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda about the question of how many hours a person will make a mistake, in most cases, but nevertheless he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda against the Chachamim, that ein bir chametz el sreifa. When the Torah says tashbisu, the only method that the Torah validates for the mitzvah of tashbisu, of destroying chametz, is sreifa. We don't accept the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. But this Mishnah reflects the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and in fact Rabbi Meir himself is on board with Rabbi Yehuda, and tashbisu means sreifa, and only sreifa is acceptable. The Ravid claims something else. The Ravid disagrees with the famous Baal Amar, and he says that although we paskin like the Chachamim, and even Rabbi Meir would agree with the Chachamim, hashpasasa b'chol davar, you can get rid of your chametz in any way you want, but they agree, the Chachamim, that l'chatchil, the best way of getting rid of your chametz, if all things are equal, is to burn the chametz. And it's not exactly clear why the Ravid prefers Sreifa. Why is that? Again, you can get rid of it by throwing it into the river.
Nobody can use it once it's burned.
Excellent. If you have something in the river, you never know. Again, this sounds very odd and very paradoxical, but something could float up to the surface. Somebody might mistakenly think it's not chametz and eat it. Burning something is an absolute guarantee. So again, there are two ways of learning the word sarfin here. The Baal Hamar learns the word sarfin as a reflection of the Shita of Yehuda. The only way that the Torah allows you to get to dispose of your chametz and fulfill the mitzvah tashmishu through sreifa. The Ravid learns that the word sarfin is only lechatchila. Obviously, we passing like the Chachamim, says the Rabbi, you can get dispose of your chametz in any way, any method that you come up with. But if all things are equal, sreifa is the accepted method. So somebody once asked me the following question. Does everybody know here what the word Sfardea means in this country? It's an idiomatic word. There's an idiom. No? You know these green big disposables, you know, that the rubbish, what? So they call it a frog, because a frog is green. So okay, it's called a Sfardea. Now, many people will take tons of chametz, literally bags full of chametz, on Erev Pesach and throw it into the rubbish. And they claim that that's fine, that the Torah would recognize this. But yet, until the garbage collectors come,
it's not destroyed.
So where's the mitzvah tashbisu? So they claim, well, we're going to take the 10 pieces that we placed out in the bedika, and we're going to go out and burn that, and that's enough of a kiyum of tash. We don't have to burn every single last, you know, you got boxes of noodles and gosh knows what, you know, you accumulated so much chametz. But the truth is, again, I'm not paskining. I'm just telling you that Tzarech Iyun Gadol here, the whole idea of putting your chametz, and it's real chametz, into the rubbish is a problem. I'll tell you why. Because the Ramban at the beginning of Masechet Pesachim, this is what I'm teaching now in the 1145 class, he's not sure that hefker is enough to protect you from Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotze. Because the real hefker is only when someone else picks it up and acquires ownership of it.
What do you mean by that? When you made it hefker, it's hefker.
But it's still Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotze. Why? Because since you have the access to the chametz, no one else has owned it. So, for example, you remember that we learned the Gemara earlier, and the Gemara has two lechas. It says Lo Yiroh lecha and Lo Yimotze lecha. The Gemara says one is for Nachri Shekibashto, and one is for Nachri Shalokibashto. And there are two types of goyim. There's one goy that you can subjugate him, influence over, you're allowed to take things away and confiscate property. But it, what comes out, says the Ramban, is both, even after you have the second lecha, you're only excluding chametz that's owned by a goy. And the chiddush of the second lecha is that even though this goy is, to some extent, is your servant, he's subservient to you, nevertheless he still owns the chametz. Says the Ramban, but if you make chametz hefker, there's no guy that owns the chametz. And it's not enough to just remove your ownership. That doesn't prevent you from violating Bal Yiroh Matzah. To save you from Bal Yiroh Matzah, you have to create someone else's ownership. Now, I'm not telling you right now that we passing like the Ramban, but I'm just saying, if the rubbish collectors come, you know, before the Shas Isur, you know, if there's one day of the year where I'd love to call up the mayor, you know, now we have a religious mayor, maybe he'll actually listen to me, and, you know, pay the garbage collectors overtime, you know, they should come very, well, you know what?
You've got to be careful there.
Yeah, they can't come too early. Exactly. That's the thing. People start.
They can't be careful exactly that time.
it's a big mess. See, my in-laws on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, they have an incinerator. You know, in some apartment buildings, it's like from the old days. You know, you put it in a chute, and then it goes down, and then I don't know exactly how it works, but
the fire is not always lit.
No, it's not.
I lived in an incinerated building.
Right. So I'm just saying that, you know, whole business that people take their chametz and they say, oh, it's like they think it's hefker because they put it out in this big tzardeya. Again, I'm not passing it. I'm just telling you, it's a problem.
We say that in the declaration. It should be hefker. Like
that's only because we're worried about the sheet of Tosfos. Tosfos' sheet is that bittul equals hefker. The Ramban has five proofs that bittul is not hefker, and his most fundamental proof is the fact that nowhere is there any source that identifies bittul as hefker. The very fact that the terminology is called bittul, and they didn't use the word hefker. Besides which, he says, that if you declare that something that you own is ke'afra di'ara, it's like the dust of the earth, that doesn't make it hefker. Besides which, the Gemara says hashpasa b'leiv, bita b'leiv is already efficient. That can't be hefker, because there's no such thing as hefker b'leiv. Not only that, Rabbi Yossi requires hefker b'fnei shlosha, they have to do it in front of a tribunal of three. And there are other shitas, I think it's... I forget whose sheet is that in the Durham that it's not hefker until someone else picks it up. In other words, it's impossible, says Ramban, to accept Tosas that hefker, that bittul equals hefker. Again, we add the word hefker to our bittul in order to cover shitas atosas. You know, we want to be okay with everybody. But many Rishonim would say, leave out the word hefker, because don't confuse yourself, bittul is not hefker. Bittul means it's ka'afra di'ara. And how that works is, for that I'm spending hours of my shiur time on that issue. How exactly the magic of bittul if it's not hefker? But suffice it to say that not all the Rishonim will accept the premise of Tosfos that by making your chometz hefker, you therefore protect yourself from ba'yirah ba'yimot. Alright. Now we embark on a very, very large, broad and complex sugya. Okay. So let me say the following. There's a parsha in the Torah called the parsha of Ir Hanidachas. That's in Dvarim chapter 13. And there, the Torah gives us what I call the paradigm or the main requirements of Edus. When witnesses come to testify, the Torah says, "V'darashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta heitev," which literally means that we have to investigate, interrogate, and ask all the questions that we have to heitev in the best way possible in order to determine what's called edus michuvenes, meaning that the two witnesses are both saying the same thing and there's no discrepancy between the two. If there is discrepancy, then we have to throw out the witnesses. Now, since the pasuk has three parts to it, vidarashta, vichakarta, vishalta, heitev, the Gemara says this is indicative of the fact that there are three basic questions that we have to interrogate the Eidim. But it's not enough to stop and just read this pasuk. There's another pasuk that has later in the same chumash, but in Perek Yud Zayin, it says vidarashta heitev, and the Gemara darshins from darashta another question that we have to interrogate the Eidim, and heitev another question. So we're up to five. Now in the parasha of Edim Zoamim, which is in Dvarim Yutes, a little bit further, there it says Vidarshu Ashoftim Heitev, and that adds another two chakiros. So all in all, we have seven different questions that we have to ask the Edim, and these questions are about two issues: number one, Makom, and number two, Zman. Where did it take place, and when did it take place? Now the law is the following. With regard to the seven chakiros, if the witnesses, either one of the witnesses, there could be more than two, demur, and they say, "Oh, I don't know the answer to your question," then the edus is completely out. Now, in addition to those seven chakiros, there's what's called bidikos. Bidikos means that the halacha encourages the bezdin to ask as many other questions besides the absolute critical seven, to try to clarify if these two witnesses are telling the truth. For example, they may ask, what color was the murderer's shirt, or the victim's shirt? They may ask, what was the murder weapon? Any of these questions, that get into the details. And here, the Edom have the right to say, we don't know, we don't remember what color shirt he was wearing, but if one of the witnesses says it was green and the other says it was red, that's called Ein Edusa Mechuvenes, that's called a Hakhosha, a contradiction between one witness and the other, and once again we have to throw out the... So even though the Torah requires seven questions about Makom and Zman as absolutely critical, it means that the Edom have to answer each one of those seven questions. With regard to Bedikos, we encourage the Dayanim to come up with as many questions as they can, realizing that the Eidim might say, I don't know. And that's fine if they say they don't know. But possibly finding a discrepancy between the two witnesses, and therefore we're going to passel the witnesses. Now you may ask, why are we going through this whole thing? We have two good Jews, Mitlangabot and Peis. I mean, they look like pretty upstanding and observant Jews. Why are you putting them over the, what's the phrase I'm looking for, over the mill?
Over the coals.
Take them over the coals. So the answer is that's also based on a pasuk. The Torah says, "V'shaftu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda." Now, the first part of the pasuk I understand very well. "V'shaftu ha'eda," the eda means represented by the bezdin. "V'shaftu" means they should be judging properly. But then it says, "V'hitzilu ha'eda," which means that the judges should be saving. Who are they saving?
An innocent person.
Correct, they may be saving an innocent person, the nidon, j'accuse, right? The person who's on trial has to be protected by the bezdin, which is really interesting, because now, the way the Torah formulates it, there's an agenda here, that the dayanim should do whatever they can to try to trip up the eidim, so to speak, and if at the end of the day they don't succeed, and the eidim are able to walk on the coals, right? I always forget to take care of this. Usher Lita used to take care of it for me, but he's in Boston where they're celebrating. So now the Eidim have proven themselves. You know, they both said he wore. Now it's very interesting because historically there are a lot of stories about Gedolei Yisrael, greats, who passeled Eidim and threw him out, dafka because they were absolutely mechuvan, they were on target to the very
too good to be true.
Now my wife tells me that when she took psychology in college, the professor did an experiment, non-Jewish professor, he didn't know the laws of Avis, but he had somebody break into the class with what was Baruch Hashem a toy gun and shoot the gun off and run out of the classroom. I mean, everyone was in shock, of course. But afterwards, you know, again, I don't know, today maybe they lock you up for doing such an experiment. I don't know, maybe it's, you know, it's abusive or whatever. But anyway, after the class calmed down, the professor sent around a questionnaire asking details about what they saw just 5 minutes ago. And they were like, everybody had a different thing. So that when there's a famous story about the Vilna Gaon, and some say about the other Gedolim, that in the middle of the interrogation he starts yelling at the Eidim and saying, you're a bunch of liars, you know, and they were so afraid of the Vilna Gaon that they admitted that they were in collusion. You know, how did they all know that, you know, he had white buttons on a black shirt and stuff and stuff. So these are the drishus v'chakirus. Now here's the question that we want to ask. We said before that there are seven chakiris, and they all deal with makom and zman. Now, when we get to zman, do we allow for some margin of error, for some element of discrepancy? And we're going to see the following. Again, we have a lot to go. What I'm telling you now is you're going to see the opposite in a minute, because what I'm telling you now is I'm letting the cat out of the bag after a very long odyssey, is that Rabbi Meir is going to allow for a discrepancy of 1 hour and Rabbi Yehuda for 2 hours, which again that's not what you're going to see here in the Gemara. But what that means is that Rabbi Meir assumes that that no two people will necessarily say the same hour, because again, they, you know, as we said, they didn't have clocks in those days. It would be a margin of 1 hour. Rabbi Yehuda is going to allow for a margin of 2 hours. So that means if one witness would say Shah Chamishis, the other witness would say Shah Shishis, there's a discrepancy of 1 hour. Rabbi Meir says Harezu Edus Mechuvenes. We can take the two and they form a body, what's called a Kat of Edim, and we rely on them. Rabbi Yehuda's going to go a step further. He's going to say if one witness said the fifth hour and the other witness said the seventh hour, we can still validate these witnesses because we can allow for a discrepancy of 2 hours. Now, after the Gemara goes through an entire sugya, which really belongs to Masechta Sanhedrin. That's the address for Eidus, for the Chakiris and Drishas and Eidus. Then, which will come back like at the end of this week, and then we'll be able to analyze the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about the Shas Yisr Chomitz Min Rabbanan. So as I say, don't hold your breath. Until we get back to Chomitz, it's going to take us a long, long time.
Can I ask just a general question about this whole question of Eidus and true witnesses? You said there could be more than true witnesses.
Right.
Do they take them two at a time? Let's say five people turn up. Do they take them two at a time?
Not that I know of.
Right. So let's say that there's three witnesses. Right. And two say he was wearing a blue shirt, and one says he's wearing a green shirt.
Right, so we can accept the two and we reject the third. But that's only in Bedikos.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So now the Gemara has a Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin, Tanan Hasam. Echad Omer, again, as I told you before, there are a bunch of questions in the Chakiris about the time. Right? Time and place. So the time breaks down into the following. First of all, we have to know what was the calendar date in which, let's say, the murder took place that they're testifying about. So Echad Omer Bishnayim b'chodesh. It was on the second of the month. Ve'echad omer b'shlosha. It was on the third of the month. Rabosai, if you haven't seen the next two words, what would be your clear-cut answer to this question? Can we accept two edim? No. Well, guess what? The Gemara always shocks us. Edusan kayemes. This is not called a hakhosha, and we can accept the two witnesses. Now, this discussion in the Mishnah is very relevant to, you know, the period of time that we're going to start tonight with, which is Adar Aleph. And Adar Aleph is only the precursor, so to speak, preparing the way for Adar Beis, because we have what's called a Shana Me'uberes. Now, in a Shana Me'uberes, it's very possible that there would be a discrepancy. But life gets even more fascinating here, because every month potentially could be a Chodesh Me'ubar, otherwise known as Mole. Because with lunar calendar, there are some months that are 30 days, that's called a Mole, and then there are some that are Chaser, which is called a 29-day month. Now, Beis Din is going to have to determine whether or not they should extend Rosh Chodesh, or I should say, extend the month for another day. Not everyone would know, the man on the street did not know whether or not the previous month was Chaser or Mole. The word would get out over the next 2 weeks. It would actually take until the middle of the month till your average Joe would know whether or not the previous month was 29 days or 30 days. And therefore, you could have a discrepancy of one day. And that's what this Mishnah is analyzing here. A dus on kayemes. Why? There's this margin of error of one day. Why? Shezeh, we'll call him Ruvain, one of the two witnesses, Yodea be'ibura shel chodesh. He knew that the previous month had 30 days. That's called Ibra chodesh. So it means that Rosh Chodesh is on the 31st day, that's the beginning of the next month. Vizeh, but Shimon, his co-witness, Eina Yodea v'Ibur Rosh Chodesh, he mistakenly thought that the previous month was 29 days, and therefore Rosh Chodesh was on the 30th day. So therefore, according to Shimon's Cheshbon, today is the second, the Hayom Hasheni L'Chodesh, the second day of the month is really the Shlishi Shebo, because he was not aware of the fact Ibura Shel Chodesh, and therefore they both meant the same day. Okay, now before we go on, we have to ask the following question. We have a principle called the Yitzilu Ha'eda. Now, Yitzilu Ha'eda means that Beis Din has to bend over backwards to try to find a discrepancy between the two witnesses and disqualify them. Because Beis Din, so to speak, is a representative of the Nidon, the one who's on trial trying to find him, trying to vindicate him. So Tosus right away at the beginning here says, Vehiksha Riva, He says, wait a minute. We're not even going to ask the witnesses about the Ibur. Are you listening carefully, Rabosai? This will make your hair stand on end. We don't even have to investigate and interrogate the Edim and say to them, oh, here's a quiz question. How many days were there in the last month? 29 or 30? What we're going to do is, we're going to invent this explanation in order to reconcile the two witnesses. We're going to say that even though one witness says it was the second day of the month, the other says it was the third day of the month, well, this one knew about Ibur HaShana, Ibur HaChodesh, and this one didn't. Well, Tosa says, why are you just letting them off the hook like that? And as a result, we're going to kill the Nidan. We're going to put him to death.
But you can ask that person what his assumption is from...
And we don't ask him. Why don't we ask him? You know, you're coming up with a fantastical idea. The reason why he called it the second of the month is because he knew about the... Or he didn't know about the... Why do you assume so? Maybe they're lying, these two witnesses. Maybe there's a discrepancy here. Why not ask them?
Yes.
You know, give him a lie detector test. Find out. You know, he'll say, well, last month was only 29 days. This guy will say 30 days. And everyone's... And we don't even ask that question.
I would think you'd say it was Tuesday the
2nd. Oh, excellent. Steve has the answer. Because they both identified as the same day of the week. Amongst the various questions that we ask them is not just what day of the month it is, the calendar date, but also what day of the week it was. Now, it's very strange because, let's say, Reuven says it was a Tuesday, but it was the second day of the month. Now, we know that Tuesday was on the third day of the month. That's where we plug in this business that he didn't know about the Iburo Shel Chodesh. Again, I'm only telling you the beginning of this Tosis because there's a lot more to it, but I just wanted to get you a little bit oriented, so to speak, get your feet a little bit wet in this sugya. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continues. Echad Omer B'Shlosha, the Echad Omer B'Chamisha. One says it was on the third day of the month, the other on the fifth day of the month. Now there's a discrepancy of 2 days. A dusan betela. We have to throw them out. Why? Because if there was a mistake about the Ibur of the Chodesh, how much of a margin of error can you grant? Only 1 day. Now there's a discrepancy of 2 days. You have no explanation that could reconcile these two witnesses. You therefore, ipso facto, you have to assume that Ene Dusa Mechuvenes, and they're not saying and testifying about the same day. And therefore, we have to throw it out. Now here, there's a long, long discussion. Could it be possible that you would have 2 months consecutively that are Malayim? And maybe one of the witnesses did not know, and he assumed that the last 2 months were 29 days, and therefore, hence, he made a mistake of 2 days.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Oh, so he says that the reason why Ein Adam Toa Ela B'Ibur Echad is because most people, by the time we get to the second half of the month, now again, I'm not sure if it's most people or all the people. I mean, that's, again, everything's a sugya here. But generally, you know, the word is out by the second half of the month. You know, we get up to the 15th of the month and beyond, everyone knows what day of the month it is. So if they're arguing, if there are discrepancies at the beginning of the month, they may be aware or unaware of the status of the previous month, but they're surely aware of the problem of the status of the month before that. Now, our calendar works differently. In other words, I'll just make this very quick because this is hours and hours of work. There are two types of HaChodesh HaZelechem, meaning two ways of fulfilling the mitzvah of being Koveh the Chodesh. The original way was through witnesses. Right? That's called Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah. Re'iyah means that two witnesses came and the Mishnah is exactly what questions we have to ask them. For example, I was walking up the street here on Shabbos morning and I saw the moon. I can testify that the moon was there on Shabbos morning. I was walking up Kovshei Katamon and had a beautiful view of the moon. And I said to myself, wait a minute, Rosh Chodesh is on Tuesday and Wednesday. Why am I seeing the moon on Shabbos?
It's the old moon. It's the old moon.
Ah, it could be it's the old moon.
It is, because it was
the molar hasn't
occurred. But how do you know it's the old moon? How do you know it's not the new moon?
Because the old moon is like this and the new moon is like that.
Ah, so that I didn't know. The Mishnayos in Rosh Hashanah say it depends where you saw the moon.
Also the evening or the morning.
Right, and whether it's in the west or the east and so forth and so on. So I'm just telling you that, you know, to interrogate Edom about the Chodesh is oh. Then at a certain point in history, which is called Hillel Hasheni, he established the calendar. That's called Kiddush Al Pi Cheshbon. And the way he established the calendar is that we don't have 2 months in a row that could be Chaser. It's Chaser and then Molad. But again, back in the time of Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah, you could have 2 months in a row that would be Chaser. So therefore, we could have a discrepancy of 2 days. So Tosfos says, by the second half of each month, we would already assume that we know.
But that's not the example in the Gemara here. The Gemara is the beginning of the month.
But why is the Gemara giving an example of the beginning of the month? Because there could be a discrepancy of what? 1 day.
Ibur.
Right? Because he knows about the Ibur, he doesn't know about the Ibur. But again, if you're talking about the month before that, so then the fact that you're already a month plus ahead, forward, that makes it impossible for us to assume that he didn't know about 2 months ago. Okay. Ein echar omer b'shtei shos. Okay, we have to end soon, but let's see if we can hop around a little bit more in the Mishnah. So one witness says that this happened after 2 hours of the day. The echad, the other one, says shalosh shos. Okay, this is getting closer to our sugi, right? Because now we have a discrepancy of 1 hour. A dusan kayemis. Okay, this is all Rabbi Meir. Then we have eid echad omer v'shalosh, v'echad omer v'chamesh. Now this is a discrepancy of 2 hours. A dusan b'teila. So in the resha, there was a discrepancy of 1 hour, a dusan kayemis. That's not considered hakkasha. There's no contradiction. But if it's a 2 hour discrepancy, that's irreconcilable. A dusan b'teila divrei Rabbi Meir. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, even in the case of 3 and 5, a dusan kayemis. That's not considered hakkasha. And we're going to rather assume that there was a mistake. Now again, you know, we're baffled by this, because what do you mean you assume it's a mistake? Maybe it was a mistake, or maybe it's not a mistake. You know, v'yitzilu eidah, we got to save the nidon. So, you know, this is again the same problem that's coming to haunt us. In the previous problem, we said at least he got the day of the week right, so they're both saying it was on Tuesday. But in this case, they're talking about a discrepancy of hours, so you're going to say, well, they made a mistake. Well, why do you assume they made a mistake? Why not go the other way around and say that that there really is an irreconcilable discrepancy? Echad Omer b'chamesh, v'echad Omer b'sheva. Here's a case where even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, Eidusan b'teila, you cannot reconcile 5 and 7. Now watch this. The 5th hour is what we call 10 a.m. The 7th hour is afternoon. Oh, so Rabbi Yehuda says, "V'chamesh hachama b'tzad mizrach, b'sheva hachama b'tzad marav."
That's what we're just saying.
So, you know, to make a mistake you can make a mistake according to Rabbi Yehuda of, let's say, 2 hours, but that's all in the morning, or let's say in the evening. But to make a mistake of 2 hours in the middle of, you know, going from morning to afternoon, if you follow what I mean, from the sun being on the west to the sun being on the east, or something along that line, that's already, nobody makes a mistake of that sort. And here the Gemara is going to get into the whole issue of Yom HaMa'unan, which means a cloudy day, and maybe they couldn't see exactly where the sun was. So, B'li Neder, what we want to discuss tomorrow is how much of a margin of error does Rabbi Meir allow between the Eidim and Rabbi Yehuda. If you just take a look, I'm not going to read it now, but the Gemara is going to tell us that Rabbi Meir doesn't allow for any discrepancy whatsoever. No mistake. There's no margin of error that he recognized. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda recognizes a mistake of a half hour. Just one 30-minute mistake, and that's it. But what we're going to do now is we're going to, you know, since the chakiros don't get as specific as what moment within the hour. Do you follow? We only ask them the hour because they didn't have clocks and watches that like we have. So therefore, when a person says, for example, it happened in the fifth hour, what does he mean? Does he mean the beginning of the fifth hour, or does he mean the end of the fifth hour? And that's going to be a major difference. Because if one guy said three and the other guy said five, the guy who said three might refer to the end of the third hour. The guy who said five might refer to the beginning of the fifth hour. And then there's only discrepancy of one hour. And not only that, in the case of two and three, it could be there's no discrepancy whatsoever, because two means the end of the second and three means the beginning of the third, and that's exactly the same moment in time. So that's what we're going to see, I believe, Ned, tomorrow. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day. And
Nowadays, you can have 2 months with 30 days. This year, 2 months of 30 days.
Oh, you do?
Because it depends.
You know, because it's a Shana Mubaret?
Exactly. Ah. This year is 355 days. Cheshvan and Kislev both had...
Oh, Chosim.
Mubaret.
Oh, they're both Mubaret. And you can have two Chosim?
Correct, if it's, yeah. Are
you still doing Mishnah Berurah?
Oh, so we had yesterday. So,